really fired up about tomorrow.
It's a big day when we start talking about what we think of what the Bears did in the draft. And it isn't just about the draft. It's about where the Bears are as a team. And add this day in and add the comments of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and George McCaskey into how we feel about the Bears right now. And this is one of those times. I said it before. I will say it again. My PSA, two PSAs today. Get your damn dogs off your laps while you're driving. Stop driving around the city of Chicago with your dog in your lap. I've seen it too much, and I want it to stop. It is dangerous. It's dangerous for you. It's dangerous for the dog. It's dangerous for other motorists. The other PSA is stop and smell the roses as a Bears fan. Enjoy this. As we nitpick all of it and we look at roster spots and all that, realize how much fun it is to be this optimistic about your team and understand that that's part of being a fan. Don't forget to appreciate it. There, I'm done. Lawrence Holmes is here.
Hi, Lawrence.
Hello, man.
I'd like a kicker that I'd like as an addendum. I'd like an actual kicker. But other than that, I feel pretty decent about things.
Well, they got four kickers.
Not so bad. Yeah, and maybe a fifth and a sixth. You know, Ryan Pace was on the Molly and Haw show this morning
this
saying, yeah, it's
what they should have done in October.
Yeah, we mentioned that a little bit. They really ought to have. They had chances in week 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 to bring in kickers to fight for a job and maybe not miss kicks, but they didn't, so that's where they are now.
And I like that they are addressing it this way, that we are going to take a different, instead of us falling in love with guys and giving them guaranteed contracts to kick for us,
right?
We're going to make someone earn this job, and that's the way that it should have been. So they're correcting that, and I give them credit for it.
I just have no trust in the procedure. I don't think that somebody winning a kicking contest gives us any predictive understanding of how they'll be in a real game.
I agree with you.
Winning a contest is a pretty decent way to decide value and worth.
Stop.
I'm just saying.
Yes. It can lead to someone having a long and fruitful career by winning a contest.
However it happens, that is, I don't think we should rule a contest out of the whole plan.
Like
here.
Saying that a contest winner is unworthy. That is ridiculous.
I'm just saying that's not necessarily predictive.
Let's just not rule it out as a process.
But I actually do think that their process is better overall, and maybe what ends up happening is they won't fall in love with someone and just say, here's all the money to kick. And then that person doesn't have to keep looking over their shoulder. I think that some of their draft has really allowed for them to have competition and depth on a young, hungry roster. So why shouldn't it be that way with a kicker as well?
I'll bring up a counterpoint, though. Isn't that a position where you could understand psychologically they're thinking, like, let's make this guy feel okay and stable about himself? Do you want somebody waiting for that ball to be snapped thinking, if I miss this, I'm cut? Or do you want a guy waiting for that ball to be snapped to think confidently in the moment, not so worried about his professional future?
What I want is for the moment when that kicker misses his kick to go, I better not miss another one. Like, you miss one, yeah. You miss a couple, but when it gets to be ridiculous and you're hitting uprights 5 times in a season and you didn't do everything possible to make yourself a better kicker, like kicking at Soldier Field, for example.
The place you kick.
Right.
That, you know, that's what that is.
Not
going to
really
the place you kick to
wanting
kick.
To actually practice.
That didn't help.
Yeah, it really didn't. And the way that the Bears reacted to it, I don't think helped either. You know, with the helicopters and everything.
Mm-hmm. That whole deal.
Like that was bad too. And then it just kind of lingered and all that good stuff. But I was very intrigued with their draft and with one of the guys that they signed as an undrafted free agent.
Oh, so we were just looking at Greg Gabriel's favorite from the undrafted free agent ranks. Is he
same? Who did he say?
Dax Reynolds?
Raymond.
Dax Raymond.
Nope.
Is it Emmanuel Hall?
Yes.
Ah. That was the other name I brought up. He can move.
Yes, he can. So they've got a couple of intriguing players as far as I'm concerned.
There's no spot for another wide receiver, though. You're jammed to the gills as it is.
That's what I mean by competition from a young, hungry roster.
As much as I kind of liked Javon Wims and his ability to do some things and the confidence the Bears had in him to take him and hold him as a 7th-round pick, I like that Javon Wims doesn't have this sit back, lay down, get a job kind of thing.
Correct.
Riley Ridley can challenge for that. Then that's a draft pick. But you've also got undrafted free agents with a bit of a different skill set that might be able to go fight for something different.
The guy that wins that job is the guy that becomes the new Josh Bellamy. The guy that wins that job is going to play multiple receiver positions and be a mainstay on special teams.
And put himself on a shirt.
He doesn't have to have the hoverboard. Maybe he'll actually wear a Josh Bellamy shirt. But just being able to play multiple wide receiver spots in this offense gives you a leg up. A guy who can get you out of a game if somebody gets hurt.
Forte and Lance had a nickname for him when they were teammates.
Was it kind?
It was a selfie stick. It's about me.
Well, what was his? Josh Bellamy's like, I'm the guy with the sauce.
Yeah.
I've got all the sauce.
He's got it all. Get it out of here. How about you take it out of town? Take all that sauce with you.
How about he be the guy with the hands?
Yeah, the guy that
catches the ball.
That would also be good.
Come back to a football, Josh.
But no, that's fine. It's totally fine. So, yeah, it was. I thought that there was there's enough there that if you want to pick nits, you can. With the trade, you can go,
oh,
really?
Because yeah.
You could have had a back that everyone kind of had as the same on your board. You could pick nits if you wanted
to. There's three running backs taken in those 17 picks that everybody goes, huh, same kind of guy.
Yeah.
You didn't really have to move for any of that. So, oh,
and when
guy.
You see that the Patriots are like, oh, yeah, we're totally going to take the same position.
Damien, yeah, sure.
We're going to take that guy.
Except for that. All good.
And you know he's going to run for 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns next year.
He's going to come for Jimmy White's job. He's never given that up.
No, he's found
it. You speak ill of Jimmy White.
James White knows his value. His value is, watch this. I'm going to catch 12 touchdowns this year.
Whose coverage did you watch?
I don't know that there was a predominant cover.
I didn't go to ABC at all. I didn't go to ABC at all.
Oh, yeah, I suppose I didn't either.
I stayed on ESPN and jumped over to NFL Network.
I watched only NFL Network and was very pleased.
Yeah, I guess
what was it that was pleasing?
The presentation, the lack of shouting. It was
surprising.
It was a very comfortable watch with
Rich Eisen kind of holding it down.
I like him. I like his demeanor. I just thought that there was a lot of information without too much hyperbole. One thing I hate when everybody, you don't have to say everybody's great.
Yeah, I thought Daniel Jeremiah was very good.
It's real dude.
Seemed very calm up there and offered some opinion on league stuff as much as he did the actual prospects, which I thought was nice to see.
I also like the way they move their primary camera. And it's subtle, but this is the popular thing now, is when you have a desk shot, it's no longer static. And I think it's a real art by that camera operator.
Take the jib.
And the director to sail that thing where it's supposed to go in a way that isn't disconcerting, that is almost soothing. And I found myself, as I'm watching it, there was something about the overall presentation of their product.
So you'd rather have the camera move than the director take three, take two. Like, you'd rather have that.
I would much rather have a little bit of kinetic single camera than getting the individual shots. And there was some of that in there, but I found that to be just super watchable for however my brain is frame rating things.
It's not a studio broadcast. You know, I mean, it's just not. It's a live event kind of thing. It's as much Macy's parade as it is NFL broadcast. And I think that kind of camera movement tracks some of that stuff in. I like that there's background noise the entire time. Mm-hmm. I like that there's, you know, people, you know, having their day in Nashville or whatever while you're doing the broadcast.
And I like in the morning, it feels like the morning. Like, you can see a coffee cup sitting there.
Sure.
They're kind of, everybody's sort of feeling like they're in this together. Maybe they were out a little late last night and they're not making it overly formal when they don't have to, as the picks mean less.
I think some of that, if we really want to get into like a meta conversation about sports media in general, has to do with the way you frame your experts. That your experts are, well, Mel Kiper has done 9 mock drafts and he takes this very seriously and he's got this binder, and it takes on kind of a life of its own where you have to treat it as sacrosanct.
Yeah, he's hard. Yeah.
Because the way that you have put together your experts on it makes it feel even bigger and more serious than it actually is. You know, when you go back to the idea of just the calling of the names is really what this is. And you do want analysis like that. You want hardcore analysis on the players that are supposed to change your franchise. It does become a little bit cartoonish, though, when you're talking about the undrafted free agent on the broadcast and everyone's great, or check out this guy from Idaho and let me tell you about him and why it's such a great pick to get him at pick number 245. You know, like that
what value.
Then it becomes a little bit cartoonish. I mean, we're guilty of it too. I mean, I'm going to get super serious because Dan Dirk is going to be on my show today.
Nice.
We're going to break down tape for 20 minutes on some of these dudes.
No, there's nobody better at it.
I agree with you.
He's great.
I absolutely agree with you. And so it's going to be, you know, it's going to be fun. But I understand what you mean. It's a little bit of a lighter, even though it's NFL Network, even though it's the network, it's a little bit of a lighter broadcast than what you get. And even like Trey Wingo, like it's hard for him to have fun. And he did the, you know, the shout out to Stu Gatz and everything, but it's hard for him to exude fun throughout 7 hours of a broadcast. Like, we don't trust them to do that. Like, here's a serious dude telling us serious stuff.
No, and Eisen's a stand-up comic. I mean, that's how he got his start. So he's always going to find the levity and stuff.
So, you know, it's all good. All right. So we're not going to talk about Avengers.
We can talk a little bit about Avengers. We're going to do our reviews in the midday tomorrow. I don't know if you read the story about the kid that got his ass kicked outside of a movie theater in Hong Kong for yelling spoilers and stuff on the way in.
That's fair.
So, yeah, sometimes you deserve that kind of thing.
Yeah, I cover my ears.
We figured we were going to get one more day.
If you're just yelling them out.
He was like yelling them out
that's
loud.
That's ridiculous.
No, you're going to get your ass kicked for something like that.
I'll say this because I am going to do a spoiler-filled review with Elliot Serrano, King of the Geeks.
Oh. Elliot! I saw him in. I figured that's what you guys were up to.
Yeah. I'm gonna drop that later on LoHo Daily, but I will just say that my experience watching it in Chatham was really terrific.
Oh, cool!
87th Street, went and watched it there. Saw the early show. There were a bunch of kids who were watching it, and what I walked away from the entire like 22 movie run was when I was a little kid, I always had imagined what Marvel movies would look like. And then we kind of got some horrible ones, like when David Hasselhoff was Nick Fury, and Lisa Rinna was Maria Hill, and they did a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, and it was horrendous. The movies, what I loved about what they did, what they accomplished, is that they were able to take the picture that was in my mind and make it a thing, and to then share that with younger people who are now growing up in a universe where all things seem to be possible.
It wasn't just your mind. It was Stan Lee's mind and Steve Ditko's mind.
Yeah.
And Jack Kirby.
Yep.
But just as a reader, like being able to go, man, I wonder what this would look like. Like, are we ever going to be able to get this on? Because you go back and watch Superman, which is a terrific movie.
The Christopher Reeve one?
Yeah.
The technology had to catch up.
Right. And now the technology is totally caught up, and it was very cool to kind of share that with a younger generation of viewer and have them kind of, but of course there were all the comic hat tips that happened.
There were so many.
So many.
It was so comic booky. It was pure comic booky.
It was
each one is a panel.
Extremely satisfying.
Yeah, it was.
Best line that I've heard was off the air today before we went on with Mully and Haw. We were talking about it. And I was going into some of my quibbles about cinematic time travel and how it's impossible to get it right. And I have to suspend my disbelief because there's always things that aren't going to. And Mike Mulligan said, it was time travel for me. I said, what do you mean? He said, because of how I've enjoyed these movies with my kids over the years.
Yep.
And our kids are very similar in ages. He's got 3, I got 2. But our daughters are almost identical and sons. And I realized that, too. I realized that of what the various Marvel movies have meant along the entire MCU journey. And I just thought it was a really sort of poignant way of putting when Mully said this was time travel for me. And it was made me a little emotional thinking about
it. Yeah, I think that movie is supposed to be an emotional experience. And I think it's a good, cathartic, like the whole arc. If you even go back to just Thor Ragnarok, if you go back to that Infinity War and then this, the emotional ride that you're put on is there's a lot there. There's a lot in the hero's journey aspect of it. the relationship building that's gone on over the last 10 years of this product. I was very proud of the final piece of this part of the puzzle. I thought it was very satisfying.
It's hard to do. It's hard to get right. You know, we were sort of discussing that. And I've been reading. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I was reading very smart people talking about the impossibility of wrapping up Game of Thrones in a way that's satisfying when the sprawl of the universe was part of the allure of it in the first place.
I agree. And I have some thoughts on last night's episode of that, too. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, WSCR HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, a radio.com sports station. By the way, this is a good day to listen on the HD if you have it in your car, because it's AM signal, it's thunderstorms. If you've got the HD signal, if you're 104.3 HD2, that's a good thing. If your car's got it or you can listen on it, you got an HD, you should try it.
It makes me want to talk in my NPR voice.
You could do that.
We can do the whole ASMR NPR kind of thing.
We can do the NPR review of Avengers Endgame.
I'm Corey Flintoff.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. We will be back with you guys tomorrow, 9 a.m. to noon. It's Bernstein and McKnight.